We are holding on an Aleph on the base, five lines from the bottom, another two dots. We learned yesterday about the whole issue of the Galuya, of the Galuya Zuzi, where you can have a case where a husband does a business deal with his wife or master with a slave, be it a sale or a loan, not for the purpose of the actual sale or loan itself, but rather the Galuya Zuzi in order to uncover money that has been hidden from him, which shouldn't have been. So now we're going to talk more on a related topic. You're not allowed to accept pikadon from a married woman or from an eved or from a child because they may have stolen them from the respective party, the wife from her husband, the slave from his master. As far as the child, the obvious thing you would think to say is the child may have stolen from his father. However, actually interesting, the Rashbam gives the wording over here that they may have stolen from the balabayis where they live. Now, why he uses that is because the Gemara is going to talk about later, Tosfos is going to talk about the question of whether we might consider it might have been a metzia, where it might have been a found.
From a child, by the way.
It could happen. A child could have assets of his own, but not necessarily. Anyway, the point is Tosfos talks a little bit further in the sugya about that it may be that it may be his legitimately after all. He may have found it, but if he has a father, we learned in Bava Metzia that anything a child finds belongs to his father anyhow. That's why the Rashbam is forced to say that we're not talking about that he may have stolen from his father. Evidently, he doesn't have a father. We're talking about, though, whoever's raising him. Whoever he's living by, whoever's raising him, whatever.
Really, and who would give a pikadon? It would only be a yosem. Because the child was in fact
Anyway, so you're not allowed to accept a pikadon from them because if they stole it, then you're not allowed to help them out by taking it with them, right? By taking it from them. The Rashbam explains that psychologically, if they find they can't even deposit it by anybody, sooner or later they're likely to say, you know what, I can't take my chances having this hot stuff by me. I may as well just go and return it. Okay. Kibul min ha'isha. So if you were over on that, you accepted a pikadon from a married woman, yachsu l'isha, fine, then you return it to her. Don't return it to the husband because you don't know for sure that she stole it. After all, it might legitimately be hers after all.
So on one hand, first.
So first, we shouldn't take it because it might have been
stolen. We have a shot.
Yeah.
And on the other hand, we say, no, maybe she didn't.
But right now, we don't have...
Does she return the money that she borrowed from you for the pikadon?
No. She didn't borrow money for the pikadon. The pikadon is she deposited something with you for safekeeping.
Oh, just that kind of pikadon.
Yeah. We don't know, therefore we shouldn't be accepting in the first place in case it was stolen. But once it did, we can't say we'll take it away from her because we know it's stolen. We don't know.
It's not your money, and how can we take it away from
her? But we don't know for sure. The truth is there is the Rishonim talk about the question, are we talking about even if the husband, when we say Yachtel Isha, do we mean even if the husband claims that it was in fact stolen from him or maybe not? Okay. Tosfos talks about over here a different idea over here that if she tells you later on, go give this pikadon back, instead of giving it back to me, give it to somebody else. It actually belongs to him. Fine, she has a migui. She could have taken it herself and given it to him. So therefore the same way. And in fact, Tosfos goes on to say, even if the husband does say that it is his money, he would have to have proof. He can't just say on that basis. That's how Tosfos understands this. Yachtel Isha over here, it means that she's muchzik in it, therefore the husband, if he wants to say that it's his, has to bring some kind of raya. In Perakach, it's Seir Matana, right. Indeed. Thank you. The Mesa, but if the wife died, Yachtel Labayla, then you return it to your husband, because then Manavshech. Either it was his originally, in which case it should be returned to him, or he's her heir anyway, as we're going to learn in the eighth parak, the husband Yarshin's his wife. So therefore, it should go to him either way. Similarly,
business.
What?
It's fishy business.
And maybe that's why you shouldn't take the pikadon in the first place. Kibul min ha'eved. Similarly, you took a pikadon from an eved, yachzul eved. Ultimately, when you're returning it, you should return it to the eved. Same idea. It's possible that he stole it, but it's also possible that it is his independent property after all, and Eved normally kol mashakana Eved kana rabbi, but fine, normally also kol mashakana to Isha, kana to Baila, but you always have the possibility that she has independent assets of her own, and Eved also can conceivably have that. Vimes yachtel rabbi, but again, if the Eved dies, and then you return it to his master, because again, we assume that it belongs to his master afterwards.
So before he dies, we don't assume that it belongs to his master.
We don't have any way of knowing.
After he dies, we do believe.
Because before he died, it could be it is. We can't take it away from him, the suffix. He would need to have some kind of riot.
It's a contradiction.
No, but after he's dead anyway. As a matter of fact, actually, the Rashbam explains that there's a difference between an Isha and an Eved. Stam avodim are gazlon. Typically, an Eved is a gazlon. Therefore, what happens? You took a pikadin from the Eved, then his master freed him.
An Eved Kanani,
obviously, yeah. Whenever we say Eved in Shas, unspecified, we mean Eved Kanani. If we mean an Eved Ivri, we say so. So, suppose that the Eved was freed. Suppose you took the pikadin from him, then it was freed by his master, then he died. You would still say you returned it to the master. Why? Because it's highly likely that he stole it from him after all, because Stam and Eved is a gazlon. As opposed to, with a married woman, you wouldn't say that. If she had gotten divorced and later on she died, then you wouldn't return it to her ex-husband. Then you'd give it to her heirs. Her husband is her heir, as long as they're married. But once they're divorced, then he's no longer her heir. Her children are. So, yeah, for her family, as the case may be. Okay. Kibbul min ha-katan, what happens? You took the katan from a child. Then that's different. Don't return it to him at all, because the child doesn't know how to take care of it.
So who are you going to?
So what do you do? So gula. What you should do is take that pikadin that he gave you and use it to make a gula for him. What is that? Gula literally means a treasure. And what it means, we're going to talk in the middle of the yom with my gula. We're going to talk about what that means. Vimes yachtel yosha. But if the katan dies, then you return it to his heirs. There is a machloika. There is. Are we talking about over here, by the way? So first of all, Tosfos points out, okay, again, the same way as with an Isha and an Eved, they can have independent nechassim. The same way a cotton could conceivably have independent nechassim, he could have, for example, found it. So again, like we said before, if he has a living father, okay, midrabanan, his father is supposed to get it. But if his father is dead anyway, then he himself is able to keep it. But still, it may not be. It may be that he took it from, like the Rashbam said before, whoever he's living by, whoever's raising him, whatever. Therefore, that's why you shouldn't be returning. So that's one reason you shouldn't be taking it. That's why you shouldn't be taking it to begin with, and you shouldn't be returning to him again because he's a cotton and he doesn't have to take care of it. The Rashba actually says we're only talking about a child who's less than what we learned about in Gittin called Oynas HaPa'utos. There's an age at which a child first begins to understand the concept of money. Depending on the child, it's somewhere between 6 and 10 years old. Below 6, no kid understands about the value of things. Above 10, unless any normally developed child is going to understand that kind of thing. Okay, fine, but you know what I mean. At least you can understand.
Exactly.
Yeah. Between six and ten, it depends on the child's maturity level. You have to check. So according to the Rashba, we're talking about over here, Davka, when the child is below onus haporotes, then if you return it to him, it would be like throwing it away. Oinas means the time. Oinas ha po'utes. Po'utes means little children. So once they're at the age of po'utes, the Rashba says, go ahead and return it to him. On the other hand, the Rav Hanan Wasserman points out, based on what we see over here and the way that Rashbam explains the sugya, it seems that he argues with that and says that no, even if the child is above oinas ha po'utes, nevertheless, though, we still don't return it to him unless he's over bar or bas mitzvah. Now, in all these cases, all three cases, the woman, the Eved, or the Katan, if they said before they died, Shalplanihain, that this Pikadin that I gave you actually belongs to Plani, Yasek Kipirushan, then you should do like what they said, return it to that person. Now, what do we mean by Shas Misasan? The Rashbam says it doesn't mean necessarily only when they're dying. The same thing could also be if they say it any time while they're healthy. The difference is, when they're healthy, they would have no reason to. They could just take it and return it to them themselves.
Don't we say Shas Misa is like a...
Ah, so the Yerushalmi says that. Because that's if it belongs to him. Here, we're not sure if it belongs to him. But you're thinking of Divish Shivmanach Ksuvim L'Chemesur, and that's different. That's when the Shivmanach says, give this thing, which definitely belongs to me, to Plain. Mr. L'Chaim Divam, that's okay, but here it's not really that. So they were showing him bring from the Yerushalmi, that the vote is, we're talking davka before the person's dying, because ain't on a mishaka, a person's not going to lie right before he dies and say that goes in. But according to the Rashbam, no, that's not what the Gemara means over here. The same thing would apply when the person is perfectly healthy. The difference is, when the person is healthy, there's no reason for him to say that. Let him just take the pikadin himself and return it to that person. The point is that even he's saying it, the Shas Misa, where he has no ability to do that, Nevertheless, we still believe him, and give it to that person, even though he himself doesn't have the ability. Similar to what Tosfos was just saying, that he has a migri, that she has a migri, she could take the thing directly and would again give it to that person. Similar idea. In other words, when the person is on his deathbed, he himself doesn't have that migri anymore because he doesn't have the capability of taking and giving it to that person, and we still say we believe him. Okay. So then Yasa Kapirushin, you should say like what they specified. The imlav, but if not, Yasa Pirush. Let's learn the words first, and then we'll talk about what the imlav means. Yasa Pirush Lepirushin. Then what you should do is make a Pirush to their Pirush. Meaning, so the Rashbam explains that the Rashbam gives three explanations of it, two of which he doesn't like. The first one, he says, which is the one he likes, is imlav means if you don't believe the person. If you have reason to think that, after all, okay, the person is on his deathbed, a person doesn't usually lie in those circumstances, but you have reason to believe that he is doing that in that case. Let's say, for example, what do you have, for example? This Isha is saying that it belongs to Reuven. Really, it belongs to her own husband, but she's embarrassed. Even on her deathbed, she doesn't want that after she dies, people are going to say that she stole from her husband or from whoever. So if you have reason not to believe her, then don't do what she said. Then yasa pirush lepirushin. Then sort of reinterpret her words that she's only saying it out of embarrassment, and that really it's supposed to go back to the person that we assume it came from, namely her husband or the
sure.
If you have reason not to believe her, as we're going to talk about in a second in the Gemara, we're going to have a case. That's explanation number one. Then the Rashbam brings two other explanations, which he doesn't like. One is imlav means if they didn't say anything before they died, then you should figure out what they would have said. Rabbi Negershin brings that explanation, but the Rashbam says, I don't like that. Then in that case, that amounts to the same. No, not it doesn't make sense, but it amounts to the same thing as you said before. Yachtel the Yoshev, or whatever. It amounts to the same thing. It's repetitious. Then he brings a third explanation that Yasa Pirush Lepirusha means that you should not, don't do what they said at all, just return it to the owner. The thing is, the Rashbam says, the next case that we're going to have over here shows not like that. It shows that there can be a case where you do, we're going to see that not necessarily, Pirush Lepirusha does not mean necessarily give it back to the original owner. Anyway, there's a bunch of other reasons. Well, so that's what we're going to say. So that's the Rashbam's first explanation. That it means if you have reason to think that they weren't telling the truth, then you reinterpret what they say to say that they were only saying it out of embarrassment, and really it goes to the person that you would expect to get it. That you have reason to believe that it's theirs. Yeah. There's various other explanations of Yasa Pirush Lepirusha, including meaning just that you have to check carefully into the situation and figure out who it's likely to be. Okay. Anyway. So. Here's a case in that. Dveisu de Rava Baba Chana, Kikashachva. Rava Baba wife, before she passed away, actually, it may, based on the names that we're going to have over here in the story, it might not be Rava Bar Chana, but rather one generation earlier, Rava Bar Chana, who was the cousin, he was the cousin of Rav. Rava Baba Chana was his son, so that's the next generation. Anyway, before his wife passed away, Kikashachva, Amra, she said, Hani Kipi Gemarta Ubnei Brata. These earrings belong to Marta and to which famous Marta?
There's two of them, right?
There's a bunch of Martas in Shas Way. Yeah. But they belong to Marta and his granddaughter. So who is Marta? So we have a number of women in Shas named Marta Bas Baisus, for example. But the Rashbam says over here that Marta actually is a brother of Rav Chiya. This is we talked about before about Rav Chiya's family tree, about Rav Chiya and Rav's family tree. So there were four brothers: Ivu, Chana, Shila, and Marta. Chana is the father of Rav Bar Chana. Marta is another brother. Ivor was the father of Rav.
These are
the half brothers of Rav Chiya. So remember, we talked about before that Rav Chiya's father and Rav Chiya's mother had both previously been married to other people, who then their spouses died or they divorced them, and then the ex-husband from one marriage, the ex-wife from her marriage married, and Rav Chiya was their son. So therefore, Reb Chiya was a half brother to these four boys, Ivo, Chano, Shila, and Marta, and he was also a half brother to a sister from his mother's side. Eventually, one of those brothers, Ivo, and one of those sisters, Ima, married. They're not related at all. There's no blood relation between them. And their son is Rav, which is how Reb Chiya comes to be Rav's double uncle from his father's side and his mother's side. Anyway, so the Rashbam says, Marta then is one of these four brothers. This Marta would be then Rav's uncle and Reb Chiya's half brother. So now Rav Bar Chana, so his wife is saying that these earrings belong to Marta, which again is Rav Bar Chana's uncle, Chana, his father being one of Marta's brother, and his grandchildren and his granddaughters. Again, there's different other gersoyot and explanations among the Rishonim who exactly Marta and Bnei Brata are. Okay, anyway, the bottom line is she's saying that they belong to Pliny.
Marta's a boy's name.
According to this, Marta is a boy's name. It's one of those names that can be used for both, yeah. A while back here in Crown Heights, there was a couple that got married where both the Chassan and Kala were named Simcha. Although she goes by Simi in order to avoid confusion, but yeah.
To avoid confusion.
Yeah.
Simcha and Simcha,
yeah.
Right? That's another one.
Okay. Anyway. Yeah, so. What? No, it really was. Yes. My wife knows then. Yeah. Okay. So Rava Bar Chana, whatever, came to Rav to ask what to do. Should he listen to that and give them to Marta and his granddaughter or not? Amalei, Rav tells him, Imahem Nalach, if you trust what she says, and you trust, in other words, that it's not something that might have been stolen from you, Asei Kipirusha, then yeah, you do what she says. If not, then you can reinterpret what she said, meaning the Rashbam says you can keep them for yourself. You're not obligated to return them to Marta and Rashbam.
You can keep them to yourself.
Yeah, because you can assume if you have reason to think that she might have stolen them from you, then, like we said in the first verse, this is Rav Bar Chana. This is his wife before she passed away is the one making this declaration.
Yeah. Oh, well, obviously, if it's an ordinary person off the street who got this commandment, he can't just keep it.
No, why not? The Braita is talking to the general public. Anytime, Ein Mekabel.
No, after the husband, that can keep it.
Yeah, that's what we're saying.
You can't keep it if...
No, we said in the Braita, it may say Yachdu the Baila. If the wife dies, then you return the Pekodin to her husband. So that's what we're saying over here. So now we're qualifying that and saying that if they said, V'shat Nisot and Shoplani Hain, Yasa Kepirushim. V'imlav Yasa Pirushim Pirushim. Yeah.
Which Peter says, always give back to the husband.
Which means, the Rashbam says, it just means you give him back to the husband. Again, you have the different other explanations. Whether it means
keep it, right?
Right, that's
no, but if you're a guy off the street,
then
you don't keep it.
No.
I get it.
Okay.
I just
want
to make sure.
The Ikadam, Rihachi Omalei, or another version of what Rav says to Rav Bachana is, I amidaloch, not if you trust her, in a hemdaloch, but rather I amidaloch. If these, amida means that you estimate their value, it means that you estimate their net worth of the people that she's talking about. If you know that this Marta and his granddaughter are rich enough that they're likely to have had such earrings, and therefore it's likely that they were masked such earrings by her, then fine, asei kipirusha, then you should do like what she said, the Eloi. But if not, if you know that Marta and his granddaughter are not rich enough to have that kind of jewelry, and therefore it's not likely they were ever masked such a thing, asei pirusha, then reinterpret what she said, and you keep them for yourself, because obviously then they must have come from someplace else, not from them. So the halacha is basically like
that's a bit of a chiddush, isn't it?
Well, it's a similar idea. In other words, like this, she's saying it's a similar idea. I mean, the first one is saying if you trust her, and the second one is saying that you have a more objective way of looking at it. The halacha is like the first lashon, by the way, that it strictly depends on whether the husband trusts what she says. You know, and the same thing with an eved and with an odin and an eved and the rest of them. Then we said in the braisa min akotin yasalos segula.
Yeah,
that if you took a pikadon from a child, then you're supposed to make him. You're supposed to use that money to make him a segula, my segula. Rav Chista on the sefer Torah. Rav Chista says it means you should buy him a sefer Torah with it.
Wow.
He'll be able to learn with it, and he'll have the payers is learning vakeren payemus, and then in the sefer Torah remains. Some Rishonim say, I think the Rashba says, for example, it doesn't only mean a sefer Torah, it can mean any sefer. But Sam Sofer talks about that maybe not. He says maybe the reason why we're specifying a Sefer Torah is because then at least he's accomplished the mitzvah of writing a Sefer Torah, the fact that he has one of his own. But as opposed to any other Sfarim, he wouldn't be Mekayim it. Okay. Rav Barav Hunam Dikla de Ochel Minei Tamri. Rav Barahuna says that no, the segula is rather you buy him a palm tree from which he can eat the dates. Again, he has peiros, ongoing peiros, and he has a keren. The actual tree itself is worth money as well. So either way, it's an investment. It's a safe investment. Let's put it this way. Either way, it's a safe investment as opposed to you invest it in stocks or junk bonds or whatever, you know. And yeah,
listen, if you'd invested in Apple within a year of its foundation, you would be very happy.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah,
okay. It's interesting. We had, by the way, the same discussion in Bava Kamma in connection with the question, what if somebody was chovel, what if somebody injured a child, where the money is, money has to be paid to him, nezek, tsar, etc. So we had the same kind of thing.
Well,
if the child, that's an important point, which the Drisha takes up, and he says, because he says an interesting thing. When it comes to that case over there, the Rambam and the Rosh both say that it could be either one. Fine, you could buy him a sefer Torah or you could buy him a palm tree. Either one, doesn't matter. As opposed to our case over here, the Rambam takes one view. I think he says dafka sefer Torah. The Rosh says, the Rambam says dafka the palm tree. The Rosh says dafka the sefer Torah. Why? So yeah, the Drisha on Torah talks about that's the difference, because over there you know for sure the money is his. Here, after all, you can't be sure, and therefore we have to have something which is more certain. Okay. Yeah. All right. Now back to our Mishnah. Now 11 blocks ago, we're still on it. Mm-hmm. We said in the Mishnah, v'loyla av v'nichse aben, v'loyla ben v'nichse av. We said among the cases where one person can't establish a chazakah on somebody else's property is a father on his son's nechasim or a son on his father's nechasim. Because again, like we said in the Mishnah, we assume that neither of them is machbid on the other, even if he's taking payrus over there, even if he's doing it for years on end, and therefore he wouldn't think to be mocha, and therefore no chazaka can be established. Omer Rabbi Yosef, afilu chohu. So Rabbi Yosef says that means even if they separated, meaning even if they're living apart, the son is no longer dependent on his father. So therefore, you would think the son doesn't necessarily have any business dealing with his father's nechassim anymore. But still, you assume that a father and son are not machbid on each other, even if they have separate households. On the other hand, Rava Amar Choku Loi, Rava Agoy Tabach says that no, if they separated into separate households, then no. As a matter of fact, yes, if they separated and now they live in separate households, they can establish chazaka on one another's nechassim. If at that point, after they split up, after the son went off to live on his own, if after that he starts establishing 3 years of eating payrus of a field that was known to belong to his father, then yes, we will say that it is a chazaka unless his father was mechassim.
That's halacha.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, usually I think in a machlokas of Rabbi Yosef and Rabba, usually I think the halacha is like Rabba. Yeah.
What does it involve with the chalkui?
Chalkui means that so the Rashbam just says nisparadu ha'av ba'ben, that the father and son have split up. She'ein ha'ben samuch hal shulchan aviv, the son is not dependent on his father's table anymore. Ve'ein ha'ben b'nichse aviv klum, and the son is not involved with his father's nechassim at all. That's what we mean by chalkui. So Rabbi Yirmiyahu b'Gifti tells us, Ovid Rapapi Ugda Chokuloi Karava. As a matter of fact, Rapapi one time actually passed in practice that if they split up, then the Mishnah is not talking about that, and they are able to establish a halacha, which is like Rava said. And therefore, that taka is the halacha. Similarly, Omer of Nachmri, Chok Ishtoyli Rabchir Merhumers Ardashid. So Rav Nachum Yitzchak says the same thing. Rav Chia from Hurmiz Ardashid is the name of a place, once told me, the Ishtoyle Rav Acha Bayakov Mishmed Rav Nachum Bayakov, that Rav Acha Bayakov told him the following in the name of Rav Nachum Bayakov. And again, we have, just like we had a few days ago, we had last week, we had a case where we had Rav Nachum Yitzchak and Rav Nachum Bayakov together. Usually Rav Nachman is just Rav Nachman plain and chat without a patronymic, without his father's name. But when he's together with Rav Nachman Yitzchak, then to avoid, or Rav Nachman Bachist, actually, we had over there, then we have to put him with his father's name to avoid confusion.
Oh, yeah.
Usually plain Rav Nachman and Shas is Rav Nachman Bayakov. But he's very rarely called that, we said over there. Only over there we had Rav Nachman Bachist, and here we have Rav Nachman Yitzchak,
right.
So therefore we have to call him by his father's name. Okay. So, anyway, also, so sort of Nachman is, because you're pulling this whole chain back to Nachman by Yaakov, that also Cholku Loi. The same thing. Our Mishnah is not talking about a case where the son...
Nachman bar Yitzchak, hold on, is the second one, and bar Yaakov is the first one.
Right.
So I know Yaakov split it. Right,
yes.
Okay. Yeah. Bar Yaakov is after Abaya.
No, Rav Nachman bar Yaakov actually was never the head of one of the two major yeshivas, sort of Obadissa, but he was a contemporary. Hold on.
Yeah.
Rav Nachman bar Yaakov, plain Rav Nachman Shas, was a contemporary of Rav Huna and Rav Chista and Rav Yosef and that and Rabba and that whole generation.
Bar Yitzchak is the Rosh Hashiva.
He was the Rosh Hashiva after Rabba.
Rabba, I got it.
I knew that. Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, the Rav Nachman Yitzchak is saying that Rav Chia from Hormuz Ardashid reported, that Rav Acha bar Yaakov reported in the name of Rav Nachman bar Yaakov, Cholku Loi, the same thing as Rabba is saying, that if the son and father split up and each has their separate household, then the Mishnah is not talking about that, and they can establish chazaka one on the other's nefasim, and in fact, the hilchos cholku loy. And that's the bottom line. The halacha is that, yes, the Mishnah is not talking about that case. Tanya nami hachi, and in fact, we learn the b'raisa like that. Ben shecholak, if the son splits up and from his father and leads a household of his own.
They couldn't have remaining common assets. They have to have split all the assets.
That's how the Rashbam is saying it. Yeah, that he's not dealing with his father in the chosim anymore. Yeah.
No common back accounts.
Right.
No.
Yeah. Apparently, yeah. The hilchos cholku loy. Yeah. Sorry. Tani nami hachi ben shecholak the ishtish nizgarsha. If a son splits up from his father or a wife gets divorced, hare and kashar kol adam, then they're just like everybody else, and chazaka can be established in the usual way. Yeah. So itmar. So now we have a discussion on a related topic. So what about now we have, let's say, so you have a person passed away, his children inherited his property, you have an estate, not necessarily has the estate been split up yet. So you have one brother is the executor of the estate. So now we're going to deal with dinim that have to do with that. So, echad mina achin choyim. Not so much whether there's a chazaka, but we're not going to talk so much about chazaka. We're going to talk about whether what he has the ability to claim belongs to him versus to the estate. Echad ben ha'achin shayu noisim v'noisim v'secha bayis. If you have one out of a bunch of brothers who is doing business in the household, meaning that he's the executor of the estate, so he's managing things. Is it? I do Shlosher Brachos,
yeah.
I don't keep up with what's going on in Perek Echad. I should, really. But yeah, anyway. So, now there are oinos, which means, the Rashbam says it means shtore mecher, sale document, or shtoros, or regular shtoros, like loans or whatever, yotzin al shmoi, that are coming out with his name on them, that, for example, it says on them that he bought this property or he lent out this money or whatever. The Omar, and he says, shalihem shenotin limi beis avi ima, and he says they don't belong to the estate, they're my independent assets, which I inherited, for example, from my mother's father. My mother's father passed away. He had daughters, so his daughters inherited his property. Then one of those daughters is my mother, obviously a different mother than the other brothers.
Usually what in those cases, the American law, you have to declare your assets before you have any function as a trustee or an executor of the estate.
Well, that's what we have to figure out, basically.
You cannot just come in and distribute things and then claim some of them are yours, some of them are not.
That's what we have to figure out in our Gemara over here. So does he have
conflicts of interest?
Okay, so does he have the ability to say, like, this is a shtar coming out and saying, for example, such and such amount of money was lent out. He's claiming it's my independent money. It's not part of the estate because I have it. I inherited it, for example, from my mother's father, from my mother who inherited it from her father. So Amar Rav, all of Lavi Raya. So Rav says, okay, we're not going to take him at his word. He's going to have to bring proof that this money belongs to him. Either written in his name, okay, but we would assume that he, because we're going to see later on, we're going to talk on Amud Beis, it's actually not so simple. It's only if he and the other brothers all have all common property. They have nothing. They have nothing independent of their own. Everything they have is jointly owned. Not necessarily part of the estate per se, but whatever. If everything they have is jointly owned, then whatever he has is presumably part of that joint ownership. If he has independent assets of his own, then sure, he could have independent assets. So we're going to see. We're going to go through the sugya and see. Anyway, that's Rav, that he has to bring a raya.
What's a raya? 280?
He would have to bring whatever. He'd have to bring Adim, for example. Well, actually, we're going to talk later on in the Gemara what kind of raya. Wait. Well, Shmuel amal achim b'havi raya. Shmuel says, on the contrary, the brothers are going to have to bring proof that this money belongs to the estate rather than being his independent money. Amar Shmuel, moideli abba she imes ala achim b'havi raya. Yes. Yeah.
The estate has to prove.
Yes. Yeah. Wait, we're going to go through the sugya. We'll see. Amar Shmuel, moideli abba she imes ala achim b'havi raya. So Shmuel says, you should know that Abba, which means Rav, agrees to me. Why is Rav called Abba? So we talked yesterday that Rav's first name was in fact Abba. But there's another explanation also that Abba, the title Abba itself, is a title of respect. Anyway, Abba, meaning Rav, agrees to me that if the executor died and he has heirs of his own, he has children of his own to inherit him, then if ala achim mahavi raya, then the brothers will be the ones who have to bring the raya. Because you can't expect Yisraelim to bring raya, so they don't know about the details of their father's business dealings. And after all, the shtar is on his name. That itself seems to be proof that it was him as an individual rather than as executor of the estate.
Why do you see that?
The shtar is on his name. Because that's what we're talking about. That's what we're talking about. That the shtar. Now you're right. So nowadays, for example, yeah, you'd sign a document as, you know, if you're doing it as the executor, you'd sign blah 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 executor versus, you know, and if you don't put executor over there, then it's under. But here we're not talking about that. Here we're talking about you wrote your name on it either way. So you know, without anything specifying. So Shmuel is saying that even Rav would agree that if the brother who was the executor passed away and his children want to take over, that want to say that this money belongs to us, the other brothers, meaning their uncles, are the ones who are going to have to bring a raya that these shtaros are not in fact his, that it is in fact something from the estate. Because again, you can't expect the Yisraelim to have to bring that kind of raya. Mask for a papa. However, a papa asks on that, what do you mean? How can you say Rav agrees in such a case? How could Dastin tainah something on behalf of Yisraelim, which their father himself wouldn't have had the ability to do? So yes, we do say Toyin and the Yorish, we learned earlier in the parak, that when a Yorish himself doesn't know exactly how his father came into possession of his character, for example, we will argue on his behalf that his father got it legitimately. But you can't give him more taina, that you can't give him more of a right than his father himself could have had. In those cases, for example, we had a case, let's say you yarshin property from your father and you have Adim that your father lived there for one day. Fine, if he had been alive, he would have brought those same Adim that he lived there or that he bought the property. Here, if the executor himself is not able to accomplish it without a raya, how can we say that his children can? And we see that that taka doesn't work. We see that we don't taina for Yisraelim something that their father himself wouldn't have been believed to taina, because we have a case, we learned it near the end above Matiah. V'harava apik zuga de sabala v'sifra dagad to miyasmi below raya. We find that one time Rava took away a zuga de sabala. Zug means a pair, so it means scissors. The sabala of people who comb garments. So we know in Rashi over there that they fluff up the garments and then they use a special scissors to trim off the extra fluff or the extra edges of the garment or whatever over there. So there was that, and there was a sefer of agata. So Rava took those away from Yisraelim because somebody else claimed that they were his below raya. Without the person who was claiming them having any edim in the sense of having a raya that he had actually lent them, because the dvorim hatsuyim lahashav lahaskir, because these were things that were regularly lent out or rented out. So in general, we talked about over there the concept that if you have something in your possession which is regularly lent or rented out, Then, if you want to claim it's yours, you have to bring a raya that you actually bought it. Otherwise, we'll say in the stamma you only have it as a rental or as a loan.
Like if your van says U-Haul on it, we don't really think it's yours.
Yeah. Okay. The Rambam, we mentioned then, by the way, the Rambam has a unique understanding of Dvarim Asurim Mahashal Lohaskir, that it means things that lachatchila are made only for the purpose of renting and lending them. And he gives examples over there, for example, like a huge pot that you only use when you're preparing food for simchas or whatever. In modern terms, you might say like centerpieces for simchas or whatever, those kinds of things.
Right.
So the Rambam would have
or
to
that plastic cake.
Yeah, whatever.
Like a real cake so that people think you spent all the money on a
real
cake. And then there's one piece that actually you cut off.
Yeah, whatever. Okay, so evidently the Rambam would have to understand that this Zugada, Sarvala, and Sifra Dagadja are those types of things. They're the types of things that are made by Chachila in order to lend out rather than to keep them yourself. Anyway, the point is that we see that Rava did not say Tanin and Layasmi because he said, look, if the father was alive, we wouldn't accept his claim that they're his without some kind of raya. We wouldn't, in other words, usually I'm writing a chaver of a raya. But Dvarim Asurim Lahashal will have to, the other way around. You who have the item in your possession are the one who has to bring the raya, that it's yours, because otherwise we assume it was rent or lent to you, or it was rented or lent to you. Well, the Yisomim, the same thing. The Yisomim are no stronger than their father. By the same logic, in our sugya over here, in our case over here, how can we say if the brother who was an executor is going to have to bring proof, according to Rav, that this money is his, otherwise we're going to assume it belongs to the estate, why should we accept that from the assignment without such proof?
If their father couldn't do it, why should we accept it from that?
Yeah. And the reason why that works is Kiddushalach Rav Huna Bar Ovin, the reason why Rava did that in the case of those scissors and that Sefer Avagata, is because we find that Rav Huna Bar Ovin sent a message saying that Dvarim Asurim Lahashal Lahashal, that if you have something like that, that's usually lent or rented out, or according to the Rambam, it's made to be rented or lent out. And the person who has it in his possession says, I bought it, ain't a nemim, and we don't believe him. So again, by the same logic, then how can we believe the Yisomim any more than we would believe their father? If their father needs a raya, according to Rav, they should need a raya.
Only for Dvarim Asurim Lahashal.
No. We're saying we're bringing a proof from that case where we see that just like the father, when he was alive, would not have been believed that they're his without an actual raya that he bought them. And once we say that, then we also say the Yisomim don't have any stronger position than their father did. By the same logic over here, if the brother who was an executor wouldn't be believed to say that these onus and shtaris and whatever are his rather than the estate, why should we believe the children, the Yisomim, without any proof?
Now, Rav Huna ben Bar Avin is the Rav Huna that we all think of.
No, the famous Rav Huna and Shach. I don't know if we know his father's name. No, this is actually an Amorah from Eretz Yisrael. That's why we had a couple of days ago also the Sholach that we always find him sending messages because he lived in Eretz Yisrael. He sent letters to Bava. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, okay. So the Gemara says Kasha. Okay, Akasha. How could Shmuel say that Rav would agree in that case? Now, what does it mean Kasha? So the Rashbam starts by bringing Rabbeinu Chananel, the general thing, which we always understand it that way. We've always understood it this way throughout Shas, whenever we've learned the Gemara since from Kinvaizon, that when the Gemara says Tziuvta, it means that's it. It's been completely refuted. But Kasha just means, okay, it's a Kasha, but we could manage to find an answer.
It's not irrefutable,
and therefore the Halacha may well be that Rav agrees in that case. On the other hand, the Rashbam himself says that no. The only difference between Tziuvta and Kasha both mean, the Rashbam says, that opinion is rejected. The only difference is we use Tziuvta when we have a Mishnah or a Braisa that contradicts him, and we use Kasha when we have, it's just a statement of an Amora that contradicts him. But nevertheless, it's still, according to the Rashbam, it's still rejected.
I remember, I think in Kutzim, there was a Tziuvta, someone Tziuvta, and then he came back and was a level like him in the end.
Sometimes, actually, there are a few places. Not, I don't remember in Kutchim specifically, but there are places where the Gemara will say Tziuvta v'Hilchata. There was a Tziuvta. We did manage to shlug him up. But nevertheless, the halacha is like him because, after all, we found another Mishnah or Braisa or what have you that agreed.
So and so Tziuvta, and then he came back and
okay. Most of the Rishonim pass. Usually, we know when there's Machlokas Rav and Shmuel. Usually, we pass him like Shmuel and Dinim Amos. Here, most of the Rishonim pass him like Rav, for one thing, because the Gemara is going to go on to say, the Gemara is going to go on to talk about a further machlokas on this within, which according to the Rashbam is within Rav's opinion, which implies that we accept it. As far as this business of whether Rav, of whether we accept what Shmuel is saying, that Rav would agree in the case where the executor died, that the Yisraelim don't have to bring a raya, again, the halacha is like that as well. Yes, we said kasha, and the Rashbam says that means we shlogged it up, but the most Rishonim, again, okay, the Rabbi Nachmanel and everybody else says no, it just means it's a kasha, but it's not irrefutable. You could find an answer. Okay, after all, look, I mean, even the one of the answers I think the Yad Ramah gives is, look, even the brother himself, the executor, in principle, you should be able to believe him without a raya. Why not? Look, the shtar has his name on it. It doesn't say anything about the estate.
Yeah.
That ought to be raya enough in itself, you would think. But Machmer on him would say that still you have to bring...
If he has an independent
Edom, but if he can't, just the fact that you have a shtar itself that's signed with Edom and whatever, that has his name on the face of it, should be enough. Only with Machmer on him. But fine, we're not going to be Machmer like that on your side. Omer of Chista. So, however, Rav Chista says, now, all this that we're talking about that the brother who's the executor is not going to be believed to say that these nechostim were his, according to Rav, without a raya, lo shono ela de'en chalukin v'isotam. That only applies if the brothers are not divided even in their dough, meaning that they have everything, they hold everything in common. Even their dough, even their food. So therefore, yeah, of course, we have a strong reason to think that it's not his, that it's not his nechassim. Where did he have independent nechassim from? So that's why Rav's saying he'd have to bring a raya. Av chalukin v'isasan, but if they're divided, even in something as minor as their dough, meaning at least if they don't have even their, if let's say, for example, when it comes to food, they're independent in that, emur mi'isasei kimet, then you can argue maybe he doesn't need a raya. He may have been stingy with his dough, and therefore that's how he was able to save up enough money to become rich. So yeah, he may have had independent. He had his own food. He had his own pantry. They had theirs. He ate less, so therefore he had more money saved up. He was able to sell the extra food in his pantry or whatever, and then get money for it. And gradually, he could have become rich from that. Some of the Rishonim say that it would really depend on how much we're talking about. If we're talking about, for example, that all of a sudden a year after the father passed away, he has $1 million. You can't say come up me so.
4 or 5 years.
Yeah. On the other hand, other Rishonim say not necessarily. Even if not, okay, he may have had, you know, there was a tremendous bracha in what he did. He invested in penny stock and all that. You never know. Yeah. Okay.
Or an apple stock.
Yeah, well, apple stock isn't. I mean, if you invested in it at the beginning, we're talking about, you know. Yeah. Okay, whatever. All right. Okay. Raya b'mai. Okay, so now when we talked about before, we said according to Rav, you have to bring a raya. Then what kind of raya is necessary? So now so we're going to have a machlokas about that. The Rashbam understands that this machlokas is within Rav's opinion. Shmuel, who says that the brothers need to bring a raya, then first of all, the halacha is not like him anyway. We just said the halacha is like Rav. And second of all, okay, what do you mean, what kind of raya? All they need to do is pass a shtar. So the question would be within Rav. On the other hand, many other Rishonim understand that this next machlokas we're going to have over here is basically recapitulating the machlokas of Rav and Shmuel. Whether we're saying that it's up to him to bring a raya, or whether we're saying it's up to them. Rabba Omer Raya Be'edim. So Rabba says it means he would need to have a raya, he'd need to have Edim, that, for example, he yarshin from his grandfather, or come with me, Sosei, or whatever, and only then will we believe him. Rav Shesha Somer Raya Be'kiyam Ashtad. Rav Shesha says the raya is accomplished by being Mekayim the Shtad, based in looks at the Shtar, verify the signature on it. And when they do that, they also check into the situation, into the transaction that's recorded in the shtar over there, and therefore they'll know that it is true, and after all, it's written on his name. If it wasn't really his, they would have said something to that effect, that there's a problem with the shtar. It's written in your name. It gives no indication of having anything to do with the estate. That needs to be fixed. They didn't do that. So obviously, then it would be valid. Again, according to the Rashbam, both of those are within Rav's opinion, that he has to bring a raya. So according to Rav Sheshet, then he would say once he was in the time of shtar, then Rav would say that's good enough. The other Rishonim would say that no. What the other Rishonim say that no. What Rav Sheshes means is, according to Shmuel, when we're saying the other brothers need to bring a raya, they would need to prevent the shtar from being the sky. And if they're able to show that the shtar is forged or whatever, then that's a raya not. But otherwise, if the shtar is in the sky, then yes,
The first opinion is machlech is within Rav.
And the other is that Rava is saying like Rav, and Rav Sheshes is saying like Shmuel.
Rava is saying like Rav.
And Rav Sheshes is saying like Shmuel that he's mekayim is shtar. Actually, I got that wrong. That he's mekayim is shtar, but that's not enough. If they were to bring a raya, it needs to be that there's something the matter with the shtar. Maybe the signatures on it are valid, but the details of it are not necessarily accurate.
So what did you do?
So that's what they would do. They would have to prove. Rav Sheshes would say that we bring the shtar to base to be mekayim it. And that would be when they'd argue that would be when they'd bring their proofs that there's something wrong with the shtar.
Whereas
Rab, who says that the brother, the executor, is the one who has to bring the raya, he would be like Rab, but he has to bring aid. Omele Rav or Rav Nachman. Okay, Ha Rav v'Ha Shmuel, Ha Rav v'Ha Rav Sheshes. Fine, you have the Machlokas Rav and Shmuel, you have the Machlokas Rav and Rav Sheshes. Mar Kaman Tzvirlai. So you, Rav Nachman, Rebbe, who do you hold like among these opinions? Okay, so again, according to the Rashbam, you're talking two different machlokas in one of Rav and Shmuel, and then within Rav and Shmuel, Rav and Rav Sheshet. According to the other Rishonim, it's all just one machlokas. Okay, Amalei, so Rav Nachman answers him, I'm not Nisi. Never mind the Amoraim. I can tell you what I know from a Braisa. The Braisa that we quoted before at the beginning of the Soviet. Daniel Echem and Achen, Shoyin Noisim, if you have one of the brothers this is actually, we haven't quoted this braisa before. We started by saying this case, but we didn't bring it as a braisa. We brought it as a memra. We brought it as a discussion between Rav and Shmuel. Now he's saying a braisa that comes down on one side of it.
The
Tanya, we learned a braisa. Echem and Achen show you of a notes in the braisa. You have one brother who was doing business in the household, meaning that he's the executor. But your owners are shtoros yotzen al shmo, and you have shtoros of sales and shtoros of loans that are on his name. And he says, this is my money. I inherited it from my mother, who inherited it from her father. All of lahavi raya. He's the one who's going to have to bring the raya, which means like Rav, who said that he has to bring the raya. And similarly, the braisa continues, if you have a woman who is the executor in the household, she's been made an apotropos, basically, over the nechassim of the yisoymim, let's say. Similarly, you have shtore mecher and you have shtore milva coming out with her name on them. And she says they're mine. I inherited them from my father's father or from my mother's father. Technically, the Rashbam says you don't even need grandfathers in this case. You could say that I inherited it directly from my father. But okay, since the first part of the braisa has to talk about grandfathers, then the second part also talks about that.
Why do we need a shtar? If she had a shtar that she inherited, why should she show it to anyone?
When the shtar eventually comes to be collected in Beis Din, it's going to be brought out in Beis Din, right? Yeah.
Two examples, one of a man and one of a woman.
Allah Allah Haviraya. So the Braita is saying again she has to bring a raya, again like Rav. Okay, the question is my vachain, exactly what you're asking. What's the point of the comparison why would we think there's any difference between a brother who's an executor and the widow who is an executor? Because Maudatema, you would think to say Isha Kivin de Shvichala Milsa, because when it comes to a woman, it's a matter of great importance that Beis Din trusts her to make her an apotropos over the Nechassim of Yisoymim, and people praise her for it. Amri Katarka Kama Yasmin, because people say what a tzaddikus, she's working so hard on behalf of the Yisoymim. You would think, Loi Gazla Miyasmi. You would think she's not going to steal from the Yisoymim, and she's not going to want to lose that good name that she gained from it. Kamash Malon, that is the Chiddush, that no, we don't say that. We still say that she has to bring a raya. And as a matter of fact, actually, Tosfos points out that
it would be really far-fetched.
Tosfos points out that on the contrary, we learned in Gittin that Kakev, because she's working so hard on behalf of the Yisomim, she may be motor hector for herself. She may think, she may rationalize to herself, you know what, it's not so bad if I take something a little extra from them, all the work that I'm doing, they owe me one or whatever. So therefore, that's the point we're saying over here, Kamash Malan, that you don't think that she's too worried about her, that she's worried about her good name. On the contrary, she may think, like you said over there in Gittin, to rationalize, and therefore she's going to need to bring her diet. That's the point of the Bechem.
You can take it either way.
Yes. Okay. Then the Mishnah continued. B'med v'ramamurim, when is all this talking about that you need 3 years of chazaka? B'machzei, when you're making a chazaka on a property. But we said in the Mishnah that if you're giving somebody a present, or when brothers divide an estate, then you don't need 3 years, then you need na'a gadol para. Then you need that you locked, which actually the Rashbam later on explains na'al to mean that you put a lock on the door. Not just that you lock the door to keep people out, but you actually put a new lock on the door. To show it's yours. Tosfos talks about that, no, even just locking it would be enough because it shows you're keeping other people out. Okay, gadar means you put up a fence, or fixed a fence or whatever, or parat, or you made a breach in a fence to make it possible to go through. Yeah. So then you need that. The question is, the Gemara asked, what is the Mishnah say? Otu kolhani damrin lav b'nei chazaka minu. So what do we mean? I mean, so what are we saying? That only... Otu kolhani, are you going to tell me that all of these, that the case of when you're giving a present or brothers dividing the property? So let's go back to the Mishnah and see the wording over there. We said over there that... Where is it? Then when you do no godo parat, any amount, then that's a chazaka. So the question, what the Gemara is asking over here is, yeah, I mean, these people don't accomplish their chazaka through no godo parat? What do you mean, v'med v'rama murim? The machzik, as if a nois and matana and acham shachok or whatever are not also machzik. Machzik implies, machzik doesn't only imply 3 years, it implies that you establish chazaka on the property. The answer is chasurim master. The Mishnah is missing words. When are we talking about that you need 3 years is the kind of chazaka that has to be accompanied with a china? For example, the case where there's claims back and forth. Where that chazaka sheni matina means over here, the Rashbam explains chazaka sheni matina a little bit differently than we used that wording before. Before we said it meant that you, the machzik, have to have a taina along with it, how this property comes to be mine. Here the Rashbam explains chazaka sheyeshi mataina means a chazaka where there's an iruv against it, where there's an objection against it. Wait a minute, my boy's b'hayara, what are you doing in this field? So then you need 3 years. No, in a case of mecha, wait. In other words, where there's an argument over it, then you need 3 years. Yeah. For example, the case where the seller says, I never sold this field, and the buyer is claiming I bought it. But the kind of chazaka that is not accompanied by taina, meaning that the original owner of the karka agrees that it belongs to the other person. For example, when you're giving came as a present, where they are the kind of chazaka you need is not the kind to establish your ownership of it, but to not confirm your ownership of it, rather, but to make you the owner in the first place. That's one of the three forms of kinyan of real estate, is kesef, shtar, and chazaka. So the chazaka has the purpose of making the actual kinyan. Then, no'a gadol parah. In the case of Matana, for example, or in the case of brothers who divide the estate, or in the case of Machzik Menichse Ager, when a ger died without any heirs, and you're taking over his property. So then, no, Godu Parat, culture.
In the case of brothers?
Brothers who inherited, who divided their father's estate.
Then
everybody agrees whose portion is whose. So each one needs to do no, Godu Parat, culture. Once he does, no, Godu Parat, and his portion in front of Edim, that's it. Have your chazaka, then it's a chazaka in the sense that now he was koina,
without
iru. Well, because there is no iru over here, but the point is now he's koina. Now we're switching over to the next kind of chazaka. Again, most of this parak has been about chazaka of 3 years. Cheskes Raya, it's called. Now we're talking about Cheskes Kin. So for that, when there's no objection, but you still need to be koneh the actual property in a way that neither of them can now change their mind about it, that you need, all you need is no agado upada.
And you don't need
to be you.
No getting put it there.
No, you lost agado, you put up a fence, or parah, so you knock down.
You mean you have to make a change?
Yes. If we have another minute before they start my river here, I want to mention a quick interesting word about no agado upada that Chassidah says. He says that the Noah Godel Paras can also refer on a deeper level to what the Yitzhahara does to a person. Noah, he closes up his eyes that he won't see Elikos. Godel, he puts a fence between him and Elikos. And Paras, and he breaches that tumor can come in. So what happens then? We know a person doesn't have a Yitzhahara until he's 13. He only has a Yitzhahara up to that point. So meanwhile, the Yitzhahara should have the ability to argue, I made a chazaka on you these 13 years. I own you now. In machzik and minichse katan. Now we can't make a chazaka on nichse katan, and therefore that argument falls apart. He has to be a gadol, and he's not. The chidah says that.